New York comes up with a rescue plan for impoverished Black and Latino men. Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak goes to trial in a hospital bed. The Syrian military steps up its war on its own protesters. And the rich are spending once again like only the rich can. I'm Jane Bornemeyer with a preview of the front page of Thursday's New York Times. In Egypt, an ailing Hosni Mubarak was rolled into a courtroom in a hospital bed on Wednesday to face charges of corruption and complicity in the killing of Egyptians. Mr. Mubarak was the longest-serving president in Egypt's history. He was toppled by a revolution in February as part of the so-called Arab Spring. The day's events were watched live by tens of millions on television. As a helicopter ferried Mr. Mubarak to the courtroom, cheers went up from a crowd gathered outside. "The thief is here," his opponent shouted. "The butcher is here." Mr. Mubarak is being made to account for decades of stagnation and repression so rife it became casual. Under him, Egypt lost its perch as the Arab world's most powerful country. The Times' Anthony Shadid was on the scene.
In many ways, the trial was an indelible lesson in the humbling of power. The last time the Egyptian public had seen Mr. Mubarak, he was giving a televised address. Today, he was a far different figure. He looked weak, in fact, wan. He was ashen-faced. He spoke only two lines to the judge.
In New York, the administration of Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg plans to spend $130 million in an attempt to improve the lives of thousands of young Black and Latino men who are cut off from New York City's civic, educational, and economic life. The plan is to be announced Thursday, and it's the most ambitious policy program of Mr. Bloomberg's third term. It would drastically overhaul how government interacts with a population of about 315,000 New Yorkers who are disproportionately undereducated, incarcerated, and unemployed. Beginning in the fall, the administration said it would place job recruitment centers in public housing complexes where many of the men live, retrain probation officers to keep the Black and Latino men with whom they work out of prison, and establish classes on how to be active fathers. City officials said that even as the crime rates have fallen and graduation rates have risen in New York over the last decade, Black and Latino men, especially between the ages of 16 and 24, remain in crisis by nearly every measure. Also at the top of the page, the Syrian military deployed tanks, armored vehicles, and snipers Wednesday into the symbolic center of Hama. That's the religious city that's emerged as a linchpin of the early five-month uprising. The move appeared to be a decisive step by President Bashar al-Assad to crush opposition to his rule. The military's assault marked a moment that many activists and residents had thought impossible. The government seemed determined to retake by force a city that suffered one of the most brutal crackdowns in Syrian history in 1982. In New York, Stephanie Clifford writes that even with the economy in a funk and many Americans pulling back on spending, the rich are once again buying designer clothing, luxury cars, and just about anything that catches their fancy. Luxury goods stores, which fared much worse than other retailers during the recession, are more than recovering. They are zooming. And many high-end businesses are even able to mark up, rather than discount, items to lure customers who equate quality with price. There's a waiting list, for example, at Nordstrom for a Chanel sequin tweed coat with a $9,000 price tag. Neiman Marcus is sold out in almost every size of Bianca platform pumps at $775 a pair. Mercedes-Benz said it sold more cars last month in the United States than it had in any July in 5 years. What changed? Mostly the stock market, apparently. Even with the sharp drop in stocks over the last week, the Dow Jones is up about 80% from its low in March 2009. And with the overall economy nowhere near its recession lows, buying nice expensive things is back in vogue for people who can afford it. In Washington, congressional leaders have 2 weeks to name members of a powerful super committee that is to recommend at least $1.5 trillion of additional deficit reduction measures. Names of candidates for the panel were circulating Wednesday on Capitol Hill, and some lawmakers have been quietly promoting themselves or their friends for spots on the 12-member panel. It will consist of equal members of Republicans and Democrats from the House and Senate. Lobbyists were meeting Wednesday to figure out how to influence the new panel and how to protect the programs and tax breaks from which they benefit. The panel will have 3 months until November 23rd to forge an agreement on divisive issues that have defied solutions for decades. And finally, 2.5 years after George W. Bush left the White House, the formidable network of Republican donors he assembled has largely melted away. Fewer than 1 in 5 of Mr. Bush's Rangers and Pioneers have contributed to any of the current Republican candidates. The Rangers and Pioneers, you'll remember, were the elite core of bundlers who helped the former president smash fundraising records in his 2 runs for the White House, and they remain the gold standard of Republican fundraising. Their absence underscores the challenges facing the Republican Party in what could prove to be a protracted primary campaign, followed by a hugely expensive general election matchup against an incumbent president. No Republican candidate for president this year has yet shown the kind of broad appeal that rapidly drew the party's donor establishment to Mr. Bush early in his first run. Only Mitt Romney, the former Massachusetts governor, has raised enough money in the early going to assure being competitive through this year. And that's a preview of the front page of Thursday's New York Times. For more on these and other stories, pick up a copy of the paper or go to nytimes.com. From the New York Times newsroom, I'm Jane Bornemeyer.